Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be lifting the lid on the investment trust space. We're going to be looking at where there could be some opportunities. We're going to be focusing on narrowing discounts, as well as some of the most interesting areas for investments where we have seen some flows. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Head of Investment Trust Research at Winterflood, Emma Bird. Emma, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Emma, before we get into it, please, would you be able to give listeners a brief introduction, first of all, to yourself, as well as your role at Winterflood, please?
Yes, of course. So I'm Emma Bird. I'm Head of Investment Trust Research at Winterflood. I've been in the research team there for over 9 years now. So what we do as the research team at Winterflood is we produce sell side coverage of the investment trust sector. So we aim to cover the entire universe of London listed investment trusts, excluding VCTs, and provide research reports on individual trusts, as well as subsectors and the sector as a whole for our professional investor client base. And something that your listeners may also be interested in is we have actually recently launched a new product that is suitable for retail investors called Fund Insight. Readers can access that via www.winterflood.com/fundinsight.
And we will actually include a link to that in the notes of this podcast if anybody would like to check that out. So we're going to start with quite a broad point, if we may, Erin, and it has been something that's been quite a theme in investment trusts over the last few years. We did see some pretty significant discounts on investment trusts across the universe, but we've seen some narrowing. So when you're looking at that narrowing, particularly this year, what are the main factors that you see behind that? And is it something that you see that is set to continue from here?
Yes. So I guess to give a bit of background, we've seen discounts widen considerably across the investment trust sector from the beginning of 2022, when the sector average discount was only around 2%, to a nadir of nearly 20% in late October 2023. So just over a year ago, when it actually reached levels not seen since the global financial crisis. And I think much of this discount widening over 2022 and 2023 can be attributed to the rising inflation and rising interest rate expectation environment, as investors anticipated some issues for a number of the underlying asset classes in the investment trust, but also as investors were kind of generally moving away from equities in general and reinvesting into gilts and other bonds that were suddenly looking more attractive in this new environment. But as you note, in the last year or so, since that low in October 2023, we have seen some recovery, some discount tightening, as we appeared to be reaching peak interest rates as the macroeconomic outlook became more certain. And I think also as investors look to start taking advantage of what seemed to be anomalous and attractive discount levels. But we haven't seen too much sustained discount tightening really in the last few months. We actually saw some widening again in the weeks following the budget, where we saw gilt yields rising again and kind of saw that correlation continue between discounts and yields. And the sector average discount now stands at around 15%. We do keep looking for catalysts for a re-rating. Those catalysts seem to keep coming and going. We thought potentially the new government and some political stability in the UK could be a catalyst, but we haven't really seen that. We thought maybe more certainty in the US election could have been the trigger, or maybe the first interest rate cut. We haven't really seen too much discount tightening, and there's no real clear catalyst for further tightening. But what I would say is that discounts at this level, there probably is some downside protection there from the level of corporate activity we've seen. So most notably, they have a significant pickup in share buybacks, so boards buying back shares in trust to help support the share price, as well as it being a, an attractive capital allocation decision from them, and also a wide range of mergers between investment trusts or takeovers from private equity, or boards introducing just managed wind downs if they think that the proposition isn't attractive anymore on an ongoing basis and the discount isn't going to narrow naturally, and they've just been introducing wind downs. So maybe not the most positive outlook, but I think there is some downside protection from those things.
Thank you. So you said at the beginning, Emma, that you do sector focused research, and that's what I would like to look at now is the investment trust space on a sector basis. So from where you're sitting, when you're looking at the space, are there any sectors that are standing out as being particularly attractive on an income basis? And also, are there any sectors still that trade at particularly wide discounts to NAV that maybe are falling behind the rest of the space that could catch up and offer that possibility of capital appreciation if it was to snap back in line with the rest of the investment trust universe?
Yes, I think there are a number of attractive opportunities out there. To name a few, I think the UK equity income sector has some interesting opportunities. The UK market as a whole has been widely acknowledged to be undervalued relative to other markets for a number of years, despite decent underlying performance and earnings growth at the company level. So the UK equity income sector at the moment is trading on an average discount of over 8%, even though they generally invest in a portfolio of liquid equities, and offering an average yield of 4.8%, with some obviously offering even higher than that. And something I'd highlight about the equity income sectors for investment trusts in general, not just the UK, a lot of them do commit to trying to deliver annual consecutive annual dividend growth. So even though the absolute yield may not look as attractive relative to gilts at the moment, they do offer the potential for consistent and long-term dividend growth and income growth, which isn't something that you can get from gilts. So I think that's an interesting area to look at from a yield perspective. On a yield and discount point of view, infrastructure and renewable energy infrastructure are still trading on considerable discounts, kind of double-digit discounts. They saw they were kind of one of the hardest hit during the 2022 sell-off in the rising interest rate environment. But I think there are some interesting opportunities there given the discount levels. And I think as interest rates do fall, I think we have reached, I think it's consensus that we have reached peak rates as that falling interest rate environment plays out. Some of these could look more attractive. And then on another discount opportunity perspective, private equity, again, is still on double-digit discounts, but we are seeing kind of underlying fundamentals improving there in the more supportive macroeconomic environment. We've seen a number of funds complete exits, so sell underlying private businesses at uplifts to their carrying value, so that provides some more confidence in the NAVs and valuations. And we've also seen a lot of boards commit to buyback programs there, which we expect to continue. So that again provides some support to the current levels. But I would also just add that within all of these sectors, there are kind of winners and losers. So your listeners will need to assess individual opportunities within these to make sure that you're getting the best ones.
Of course, of course. So I just want to pick up on a point that you made there, the particularly wide discount still on infrastructure, renewable infrastructure and private equity. Do you feel that that is a consequence of the macro environment still being a little bit soft? Or do you think it's more about some concerns about how these assets are actually valued, which are causing this discount? Or is it a combination of that, those two, and maybe some other factors there?
Yes, I think it is a combination of factors. On the infrastructure side, a lot of these trusts were launched in essentially a zero interest rate environment. A lot of their appeal was their higher yields, which investors couldn't get from bonds or savings in the bank. And a lot of them traded it at premiums because of this demand up until 2022. So we've definitely seen the discount widening being triggered by the macroeconomic environment and the change in interest rate environment. But then we have seen some individual issues at individual investment trusts, kind of concerns around governance or the quality of the underlying assets, which has kind of spilled over into a lack of confidence in the sector as a whole. And yes, as you mentioned, there have been ongoing concerns around kind of how accurate the valuations are. So if people don't truly believe in what the NAV is, then obviously they're applying a discount to that in the share price. And similarly with private equity, I think there were some concerns that the valuations weren't being written down to reflect the new macro environment. But as I noted, we are now seeing a number of exits at uplift, so that should be providing some more confidence in the NAVs there.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly an interesting point. Any divestment, you know, really does give it a market value, give any asset underlying assets a market value there. And then, of course, the confidence for those discounts possibly to come in. So I'd like to move on now, Emma, and look at the US election, of course, a few weeks ago now, and see what impact that had on the space. So were there, you know, any particular sectors, any particular trusts that saw a greater level of interest since then? You know, was there any changes in the macro environment influences on investment trusts as a whole when Donald Trump came into power? Was there anything notable that you've seen since then?
Yes, we did see some specific investment trust moves. So the biggest one was probably a significant rally in a investment trust called JP Morgan Emerging Europe, Middle East and Africa Securities, a bit of a mouthful. But that fund used to be called JP Morgan Russian Securities. So it has a lot of underlying holdings in Russia that not trading due to sanctions, and they're being valued at essentially zero in the NAV. So there was some hope that Trump would potentially ease sanctions in Russia and these holdings could see a significant valuation uplift. So we saw kind of idiosyncratic kind of moves in specific trusts like that. Other examples is Seraphim Space Investment Trust saw a rally in the kind of days and weeks following Trump's election, given his commitment to the US Space Force, and along the same lines with Trump's support of Elon Musk, who manages SpaceX, a private company that's a fairly big holding in Baillie Gifford managed funds such as Scottish Mortgage and Schiehallion. We saw rallies in those funds as well as the kind of confidence in some of the underlying holdings. In general, though, I think the outcome of this US election was fairly priced in. It wasn't the big shock as it was when he won the last time, where we saw a lot more market volatility. So there has been less volatility in the markets in the kind of days following it. At the underlying level, we are hearing when we speak to the managers of investment trusts that they are clearly aware of and cognizant of the potential impacts of Trump wherever they're investing in whatever asset class. There's some potential impacts from his policies, but the general consensus, I think, at the moment seems to be that there's actually quite a lot of uncertainty about what he will actually implement. And also, most managers do generally implement a kind of long-term bottom-up investment strategy. So they look through political noise in the short term and invest in just the best companies that can withstand geopolitical shocks.
Thank you. So I'd like to try now to take some positivity from the Labour government and the budget. There's not been much around, but there may be some positivity for the investment trust space, because there were some changes announced to cost disclosures. It would be great, Emma, if you could outline those, first of all, to listeners, as well as explaining whether you feel that they will be beneficial to the space and how they would be beneficial to the space, if you may.
Yes, of course. So this is something that was announced back in September this year. The UK government and FCA announced plans to reform UK retail disclosure rules by replacing what's called the PRIIPs regulation with a new framework for consumer composite investments. And at the same time, it included a temporary forbearance from the FCA, with the FCA committing that it won't take enforcement action if an investment trust chooses not to follow the requirements of the original legislation. And essentially, that the problems with the initial or original legislation that a lot of the investment trust industry has been lobbying for in recent years is that these regulations required the ongoing costs of investment trusts to be aggregated and to disclose within KID documents and other places, which we felt led to a double counting and a kind of unfair playing field relative to similar products. Obviously, investment trusts do have costs of running them, but this is all taken into account within the NAV performance that is disclosed, and most importantly, within the share price. An investor will buy an investment trust for the share price and sell it at the share price. There's no extra costs being taken off your investment at the point of buying or selling, which these original cost disclosure rules did distort, and we thought were misleading for investors. So there were changes announced in September that the UK government and FCA said that you didn't have to disclose these ongoing costs anymore. You didn't have to disclose publish a KID document. And we think this is a really positive step. It's removed a key headwind. We have definitely heard anecdotal evidence of investors, particularly fund of funds and multi-asset investors, withdrawing from the investment trust sector purely because of these cost disclosure rules, because it was just distorting for their underlying clients. So I do think it's a very positive step, potentially, to remove this key headwind. But there are further steps to go. It still needs to go through further stages before it gets implemented fully. And I think there is still some uncertainty around how investment trusts can actually apply these rules in the fairest way without contradicting other regulations such as consumer duty. And we have seen some platforms, kind of Hargreaves Lansdown platforms like that, actually removing investment trusts if they are disclosing zero or not publishing a KID document. So there's some issues around that. So there are more steps to go. And I don't think all of the issues in the investment trust sector in terms of discounts are caused by these cost disclosure rules. But I think if we can reach a good outcome on the cost disclosure rules, it will remove a key headwind and be a positive for the sector.
Thank you. So to finish off now, Emma, I'm going to ask a pretty broad question. I'm sure this is something that that listeners are going to be fascinated to hear your answer on. And it is, you know, why should UK investors consider or choose investment trusts over funds or ETFs at this point in time?
Yes, so in terms of investment trusts over open-ended funds, such as OEICs or UCITS, I think the closed-ended nature of the fund, so the manager having a fixed pool of capital, is a really positive aspect of the structure. It enables the managers to take truly long-term decisions, not having to worry about inflows and outflows. And as well as that, they can invest in more illiquid assets, whether that's just investing further down the market cap spectrum if for an equity fund, or enabling them to invest in real assets like property. And we've obviously seen issues with open-ended property funds and them dealing with inflows and outflows. Property as well as infrastructure or private equity is definitely well suited to the investment trust structure. Investment trusts can also utilize revenue reserves. So as I mentioned, when I talked about the UK equity income sector, investment trusts committing to deliver consecutive annual years of dividend growth, that's really helped by the trust structure, as they can keep back 15% of income they receive in each year in reserve and pay it out in future years if the income they receive isn't sufficient to cover the dividend in any one year. They can also use gearing, which should enhance returns over the long term, obviously if returns are positive. And particularly on the kind of the ETFs point, a lot of ETFs still are passive, whereas investment trusts are all actively managed, so it can deliver outperformance of the index. But even in terms of active ETFs, I think an interesting reason to invest in investment trusts at the moment is because of the discount opportunity, which can present a very attractive kind of double whammy potential. So if the general environment improves, if underlying NAV performance will improve, and we can see discount narrowing, so you get that kind of double whammy of underlying improving performance as well as discount narrowing.
Thank you very much, Emma. That's fascinating. So just a final note to listeners, do check out the notes to this podcast for a link through to the winter flood resource that Emma outlined at the beginning of the podcast. Emma, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you very much.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.